commencing countdown. T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Ignition.
What an incredible smell, you scum!
Dear Lord Jesus, this ain't happening, man. This can't be happening, man. This ain't happening.
Inconceivable!
Autobots, transform!
Welcome to the second episode of the Skippy and Vanny Show, guys.
Taken over by Robot Squid from the future.
Yes, as if they would be from the past.
They'd be Steampunk Squid then.
Yeah, that reminds me, there's actually a show about that. I'll have to give you the link. I forget the name of it. But anyway, moving on from that. So this being our second episode, I want to say thanks to everybody who listened. The 44 people and whoever else listened on the clicky bit. Whatever you call it when you click.
The clicky bit.
Yeah, the clicky bit. I don't know what you call it. I'm not that internet savvy. Come on. Give me a break. So this week, the end of last week on like the 12th or whatever, there was a bit of a controversy got stirred up by Gav over at Next Read in response to SF Signal's recent mind meld, the two-part mind meld about the books that every fan should have in their library. And Gav kind of went off. He thought that the list was pretty, was it backwards thinking, as you would say, right?
I'd say stale.
Stale, yeah, stale, boring, sort of. He even goes as far as to say it was damaging to the genre, which I didn't quite buy, but
Somewhat. I'll give it a somewhat.
Yeah, and I think in some sense he's right. It was really interesting, though. I mean, he said some interesting points, and he has three posts, and it kind of his opinion changes as he went along. But his big thing was that it's sort of this referring to all of the old names like Heinlein and Asimov. This sort of constant reference backwards is kind of killing sci-fi. It's like making it into this dried out corpse.
It seems like back in the day, you can look back now and look at the distinct divisions between each trend, whether it be, you know, space adventure or new wave or cyberpunk. And so, you know, and everyone has their favorite, and a lot of people's favorites are those classic, you know, Heinlein, Asimov, like science, like real classic science fiction golden age stories.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you do see those names flop out, or they're dropped out all the time as the big names. He had particularly two particular quotes that I thought were pretty good. About this whole issue, first being, I forget which post this is from now, why didn't I write that down? He says, "I'm just more than a little concerned that there is a huge and widening disconnect or disparity between those that champion the genre always looking back to some quote-unquote golden age, and those that want to move forward and support those writers that are publishing in the here and now." And then he goes on and he says, "How are they relevant to me, and how are they relevant to the here and now? And above and beyond all that, I'm going to enjoy them. Am I going to enjoy them?" Excuse me, that's a question. I can't read. And he wonders if the sort of nostalgia is clouding judgments. Like I'm thinking he's trying to get at that where we're constantly looking back at sort of what science fiction used to be, which it comes up in all these arguments about the, you know, where is the gosh wow, the amazing ooh ah factor in sci-fi. And so many people have argued that that doesn't exist now. I disagree, but some people have argued that it doesn't exist now, and that's why we continue to go back. But
I think it's just that as people write stories a lot differently than what they wrote back then, too. I mean, you can have a story that's Heinlein-esque or that's, you know, Clark-esque, but like Clark, his stories were really focused on a singular idea, and the idea was the story, and everything else was secondary. Whereas now it seems everything has to be based around character, which is not, you know, a lot of the Golden Age stories were just an idea taken to its logical conclusions.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, Asimov particularly was that. He was not known as a particularly good writer stylistically, and his characters were often referred to as flat, and they still are, and his, and of the stuff I've read from Asimov, most of his characters are pretty flat, but his ideas are amazing, so.
Yeah, The Last Question is my favorite short story. One, because it deals with entropy, which is the coolest physical law known to man, or woman, or child. And because it's just such an, you know, he explores it, and it, like, the leaps he takes are logical, but creative, and it's never, and they seem believable, even though he goes to the end of the universe and back.
Yeah, and then he did 9 billion Names of God, right? Or was that Clark?
That was Clark.
That was Clark. Okay, never mind. I got that one wrong. Excuse me. I like that story, though.
That is a good story. And that's just another one, you know? Just another example of that. Well, I think it was Clark.
I think it was Clark, but...
Well, I have it. You keep talking, I'll find it.
So I guess, like, the big thing that, like, he was trying to bring up was the problem was, where's the new blood? Because in the SF Signal mind melds, there was almost no new blood. And I actually crunched the numbers. I did the numbers. I found out all of the mentions. I took out all the anthology just because those are too difficult to deal with all the weird dates for publication of the stories and so on. And I actually crunched the numbers, and it in terms of supporting Gav's points, Nexreed's points, the numbers really speak wonders. Let's just break this down. There were a total of 191 books mentioned. That includes, if somebody mentioned a series, all of the books in that series. And I took out all the anthologies just because it was too difficult. And the books span 8 separate decades, and then also into the 1800s, which I just counted as one decade because, there were like 8 books in there, and it's really kind of difficult to span it out. But all of the books sort of break down like this. There were 8 books from the 1800s, 1 from the 30s, 2 from the 40s, 24 from the 50s, 46 from the 60s, 23 from the 70s, 26 from the 80s, 38 from the 90s, and 23 from the 2000s. And of those books, of all 191 books mentioned, only 5 out of all of those books were written by authors who have begun publishing within the last 10 years. Only 5. That's less than 3% of all of the books mentioned were by authors who could be considered new blood, who began publishing in the last 10 years.
And 10 years, if you think about it, not that – that's still kind of – 10 years is half my life, so –
Yeah, and I had to go pretty I had to be pretty liberal with the years for that, because otherwise it would have been none. Because, like, for example, John Scalzi, who technically began writing in 1999, his first book went online in 99, Agent to the Stars, but his first traditionally published book didn't go up till I think the year after, or 2001. So he's been around for almost 10 years, even longer if you consider all of his writing from before. But so, I mean, really, the numbers don't look very good for anybody trying to refute Nexreed.
How about we just do a little conjecturing? I mean, the two biggest decades were the 60s and the 90s. The 60s is where the Golden Age gave way to New Wave. And, you know, those were probably the two most influential genres on people.
Yeah.
You know, and they're awesome. I love both of them for different reasons. And then the 90s, which is kind of strange, but if you think about it, that was the time where most of the writers who are writing now probably got into writing.
Yeah.
And so they probably started to read a lot more science fiction and fantasy. I mean, they probably were turned, 20, 30, and they're like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. Let's find out what's being published. This is really cool. I haven't read anything like this in forever.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's just my conjecture, because the 80s seems like they should have more, because that was cyberpunk, and cyberpunk was everything in the 80s.
Well, it would be really interesting to look at, because those 2 years, like you said, were the biggest years, not by an enormous number, but big enough. I mean, the 60s were double most anything else, but it would be interesting to see, like, what those numbers, you say, the new wave was beginning in the 60s, and the 90s is probably when most people now are reading. Well, I wonder if that's also the same for the 60s, if maybe some of the big booms in science fiction and fantasy even, maybe that was the year when a lot of people began reading, and that's why those maybe show up more. I don't know. That's something to look into, too.
Do you remember what the one book was from the 30s?
Oh, good lord. I have the list. I can look it up. I can't remember what it was. I think it was a Lee Brackett book.
Oh, okay. I was thinking like Lee Brackett or Doc Smith.
It wasn't a Doc Smith. There was no Doc Smith books.
Lensman didn't get one mention?
Nope. Zero
mentions.
That
is ridiculous. I would have mentioned Lensman because, honestly, that is one of the best space operas ever written. Oh, this is making me kind of angry.
It was interesting that the...
My angry voice.
The names that did get mentioned, a lot of huge authors did get mentioned. But then some you would think should be on the list weren't. You know, you have Brackett, yeah, The Sword of Rhiannon, which I don't even know if that's a science fiction book.
Planetary
and that's not
romance.
From the 30s. That's actually from 1949, so I was wrong. It wasn't a Brackett book. That was the 30s.
What was it? Jack Williamson, maybe?
No, there was no Jack Williamson.
No. Okay, you have got to stop telling me these things. This is ridiculous.
I actually can't find it. There was one from, like, 1937, and I don't even remember if I remember what... I don't even know if the title ever stood out to me. Oh, here, it was Star Maker by Stapleton. Stapleton.
Okay, that's a good choice. Yeah. Olaf Stapleton, he definitely was one of the pillars of the space adventure genre.
Yeah, so it makes sense he would be there. He was the one from the 30s, which is kind of interesting. You think a bit more from the 30s, just because the 30s was such a big sort of pulpy and sort of time. But anyway, but that sort of brings us right to the other point, which is what also would Gav or Next Read, whichever you want to call him. Let's just call him Gav. We're going to call him Gav because that's easy.
Gav it is.
One of the other things he brought up, and what others have did, in fact, a crotchety old fan also wrote about this, although his numbers were a little bit different than mine.
That's kind of because he also, you know, he said Orson Scott Card didn't count because he was in, what was the term he used?
I want to say he said douche, but I could be wrong.
No, he said asshat.
Oh, okay, asshat, excuse me. Yeah,
which,
this is a very clean show. We're very clean. Yeah.
We try to keep it clean, but if we're quoting, it gets out of... It can get a little PG.
Yeah.
But honestly, Ender's Game is a great book, even if you hate Orson Scott Card.
Oh, well, I hate Orson Scott Card, but Ender's Game is a decent book. But anyway,
great book. See?
Something
great
that he mentioned, and what Gav also mentioned, was the sort of the issue of all of the big names always getting mentioned. And so I did my best to crunch the numbers for that, too. And it looks really bad, and depending how you term this, because I use the term iconic, depending who you are, you might think that some of the authors I left out might have been iconic. You might even think some of the authors I put in might not be iconic. But for the most part, I think I got it pretty right. And of the 191 total book mentions, 144 of those mentions were by iconic authors of the science fiction genre. That's over 75% of all mentions.
Yeah. Weird.
By iconic authors. Yeah, yeah.
But honestly, if they asked me this question, I'd probably be in the same boat.
Probably. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't be. I would, but I wouldn't have mentioned some of the old stuff. I would have mentioned some Philip K. Dick, definitely. I would have mentioned some newer stuff that probably is by iconic authors. But I probably wouldn't have gone to Heinlein and Asimov.
I would have gone to Heinlein because Starship Troopers is a really good book.
Everybody says it is. I liked the movie.
You liked the movie?
Yeah, but that's because I didn't take it seriously.
Ugh.
The one movie, not all the ones that followed it.
Do you realize that we just lost half of our science fiction fans?
No,
right
because a lot of people like the movie because they don't take it seriously. It is not meant to be a serious movie. It is meant to be ridiculous.
Well, you know, you just can't compare it because the book is, you know, really good critique of the military.
So is the movie. Semper Fi, man, come on. It's a ridiculous, ridiculous critique of humanity in general, really.
Yeah, but the book isn't. The book is very logical. Very, very good.
Yeah, but so is the movie. It's just logical in a way that's ridiculous.
Come on, man. I'm trying to get our fans back. You're not helping.
I'm sorry, but I'm a Neil Patrick Harris fan, so you're just going to have to deal with it.
Oh, yeah. Wasn't he the smart kid?
He was like the guy who could read people's minds and, like, yeah. That's one of those freaking Hauser could read giant alien slug brains, man.
That's one of those movies where you cannot compare it to the book. You shouldn't even call this movie the book. You know, just like I Am Legend should call, you know, I Am Legend, because they're so different. They're hardly even, you know, can hardly even argue superficially they're the same, because they're not.
I don't, though. I don't argue that it's the same as the book. I just argue that as a movie on its own merits, it's good. It's the same logic I use for why I love Total Recall. Is Total Recall a great acted movie with great, you know, no, but it is still awesome. I love Total Recall. I will always love Total Recall. I have it on DVD. I watched it 20 times in the last 6 months, so. That movie is great. Come on, have you watched Total Recall?
I have no words.
You have got to see it again.
I have no words.
Just watch it and think about when that movie was made, and then look at the special effects. They're amazing.
I'm thinking about resigning from the show.
Sorry, you can't. This is slave labor. We're like China.
Honestly, this is why you should be Fanti.
No. I'm just saying. No, I'm sorry.
Just saying. That's why you should be Fanti.
I'm not. I'm Skiffy.
Well, we should let our listeners decide who's Skiffy, because I'm pretty sure I would get the vote right now.
No, I'm sorry, but we can't.
Okay, listeners, you get to decide who is Skiffy.
No, you don't. No, we're not doing that.
And let it be said, I am a rather large person, and I have the power of the internet to find out where you might be.
I'm older than you.
Exactly.
So I can do whatever I want.
I'm the fresh face of science fiction. What are you talking about?
There's no fresh face about you. No.
That was low. That was very low, man.
Yes, it was very low. Anyway, we've digressed completely away from what we were talking about, and it's all your fault. I'm blaming you. Going back, anyway, so after all of that, after all the numbers, I mean, really, when you think about it, Gav was right. Like, the stuff that was mentioned was predominantly old stuff. Where is the new blood? I mean, he brings that out. That's his question. Where is the new blood? And that's a question I would ask. Where is the new blood? I mean,
well, you know, we honestly are in a golden age of fantasy right now. And anytime you're in a golden age of any genre, the other genres are going to be pushed out a little bit. And I think that's a lot what we're experiencing. Because we have so much fantasy. I mean, steampunk is mostly fantasy, especially now when you're starting to, like, I think Bone Shaker has zombies in it, you know?
That's sci-fi. What kind of zombies
again,
are we talking
again,
about?
Again, you're Fanti, okay? You're Fanti.
Wait, what kind of zombies are we talking about?
They are zombies created by a gas leak or something.
Okay, so it's science fiction.
It's the same kind of science fiction as New Weird is science fiction and New Weird is fantasy.
No, the zombies. We're talking the zombies are science fiction, not the rest of the book. Just the zombies.
I know, but steampunk right now, because it's starting to... a lot of the time now, it's including supernatural beasts like vampires and werewolves and zombies... It is fantasy. It's hard. I mean, Ted Chiang's Exhalation, that was a science fiction steampunk because there are logical reasons for everything. But most steampunk is just that. It's fantasy.
Oh, I agree. Yeah.
And you know, New Weird was the big thing 4 or 5 years ago. That is fantasy. We haven't had a new science fiction genre. I mean, if Greenpunk takes off, which I'm hoping it doesn't actually, because I don't think it's rather very interesting, that could be the thing that saves science fiction. Jason Sanford earlier this year had a post called Strange SF, which he used to describe writers like himself and Ted Chiang, and that's actually kind of, it works to a point.
Sci-fi strange is the
sci-fi
term.
Strange, and it works to a point. It's, I mean, their stories aren't fantasy. They have more science fiction tendencies, but they're a little out there. But we need some sort of reboot of a genre with a modern twist or new genre to crank it out, because the vampire fantasy genre is blanketing everything out in every other genre.
Fair to urban fantasy, though, the large reason why urban fantasy is doing so well is because it easily crosses over with the largest genre market of all times, which is romance. It's easily crosses over. In fact, you see that if you go into the major chain stores, you see urban fantasy titles appear in the romance section and in the sort of paranormal romance, and vice versa. You see them sort of – and so that's an easy transition. You can go from these romance – not like Harlequin romance, but maybe
I know.
I don't know.
I'm sick of seeing, you know, these half-naked women's back tattoos in the bookstore. I want more spaceships. That's what I want.
I mean, well, to be fair, I mean, all of the covers for most fantasy forms, and even for science fiction, have become repetitive beyond reason. I mean, like you're saying, you know, how many books can we probably go online on Amazon right now and in the next 5 minutes find that have a woman with her back exposed with a tattoo on it?
Realms of Fantasy, like 2 months ago, I don't know if they still have this ad, but the ad was for, you know, urban fantasy romance, and it was on 80% of the covers had that exact tile, and the woman's just wearing like a different colored top, and they're all dark-haired women too. It's kind of strange.
It's just the trend, and it sells books. Largely, it sells books. For us, it doesn't, but I don't think we're usual fans of the
demographic.
Genre. Yeah, we're not. Well, I mean, I like urban fantasy. It's okay. Some of it's pretty good, but that's not the point. The point we were trying to get at, which we keep getting sidetracked.
We'll get to it eventually.
From, well, there's just so much involved with this, and that, you know, and what you were saying, like, we need these modern reboots, and I think the problem with that is, we have tried to do modern reboots of old genres. You had new space opera. You had post-cyberpunk. And there were some others which have now left my brain. But both of those, I don't know if you would say new space opera has failed, but certainly post-cyberpunk didn't go anywhere. Have post-cyberpunk tales that exist and sell, but for the most part, post-cyberpunk didn't go anywhere.
New space opera, I have both of the new space opera anthologies. They're just science fiction stories. They do nothing to set themselves apart as their own genre.
Okay, so in that sense,
I don't consider it a genre. I honestly don't.
But has it gone anywhere? I don't know if it has. I don't feel like it has.
It's kind of weird when you open up an Asimov's or an Analog and you don't see a story that's somehow set in space. You know?
Well, Analog doesn't shock me. Analog doesn't shock me because they're tend to be very, or they're supposed to be hard SF oriented.
A lot of their titles are kind of goofy, I've noticed lately. And they're like puns. They have a lot of pun titles this year.
Well, maybe they like puns over there. I don't know. The guys who run it are kind of old.
Yeah.
Schmidt is like 800 years old, isn't he?
He is getting there. Maybe that's
been at it for a long time, though. And
maybe that's it too. Maybe it's because the magazine editors, for the most part, are middle-aged. You know.
Possibly.
Because that would really have. They would have their likes and dislikes, and if you know they had a chance to publish an author who's still alive who they liked when they were younger, they would. I would. You know.
Yeah. Well, let's get right down to this. Who do you think are, say, 1 to 3 of the fresh new blood for science fiction right now?
Like published in the last 10 years?
Within the last, we'll be fair and go with the last 10, just to be fair.
I honestly can't come up with one that's only been publishing for 10 years.
Within the last 10 years, not just, I mean, it could be anybody. As long as they began publishing within the last 10 years.
I can't think of any.
You can't think of any?
I read short stories, which I think will always be the preeminent genre for science fiction. I read them constantly, and I cannot think of a single person who has started. I mean,
what about Ted Chiang? Because you like him a lot.
He's been publishing actually since the early 90s.
Oh, okay. Well, then
but back then he went through periods of 5 years where he didn't publish anything.
Okay. Well, I would put on that list easily would be Tobias Bekele, but...
I've only read one story by Tobias Bekele, and I won't call it science fiction.
Read his novels.
I will read his... I'll read it. I'll read at least one during this summer.
Okay, good. I think you... Well, we can talk about that later, but I would definitely put Tobias Bekele on there, and Edward Willett. I would definitely put Edward Willett on there.
I haven't heard of him.
He's a Canadian sci-fi author. He wrote Marsiguro was his... I don't think it's not his first novel, but it's like his first sci-fi novel. And then there's Terra Insiguro was the sequel.
Oh, I've heard of that one.
Both of them are good. You should read them. They a lot of it's a lot of genetic engineering and really cool, like crazy sort of polar opposites of religion and stuff. It's really interesting.
Okay.
But I would definitely put him up there. So those two, absolutely. And I'm sure some other authors whose names I've now completely forgotten. And
well, this is a good segue because, you know, China Mieville has only been publishing for about 10 years.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And his next book is a space opera.
Yes, which has people really excited, by the way. This would be our new segment, so.
Oh, it's got me, you know. I can't wait till next May. It's going to be a really good 22nd birthday next May.
And that's not even just the only thing he's working on, because that's the book that he says that just went to the publisher. So he's got another book he's working on after that.
Yeah, and the title's going to be Embassy Town. It's going to have aliens, he says, and that could mean anything with Mieville, but no matter what it is, it's going to be good.
Yeah, it'll be, I'm thinking it's going to be pretty, very much kind of like Perdido Street Station with that just gritty realism.
He's good at the gritty realism.
Oh, definitely, definitely. To the point of being disgusting at times, so. Yeah,
but it's a cultivated, you know, decadent disgusting.
It's like a fine wine.
It is. It honestly is. I mean, you look at his disgusting and you're like, yes, that's very nice, Mr. Mieville.
Yeah, we could go with that.
And it's weird when the city and the city set in a poor Eastern European city, or fantasy city, is one of his less gritty novels, even though it's incredibly gritty.
Yeah, I'm still in the middle of Perdido Street Station, and I do like it, but it is really gritty and realistic, so. Very detailed.
Yeah, it is very detailed, but it never gets, like, overbearing.
That's true. I think it does a little bit. Sometimes it gets a little bit overbearing, but that's me personally.
Well, it's a little self-indulgent, but because it's written so well, you don't care. I don't care. I'm speaking in the third person now.
Yeah, don't refer to yourself in the first person. It's creepy.
Adam doesn't care about this. Adam thinks it's quite nice.
Well, okay, now you're creeping me out. You need
okay,
to stop.
Skiffy thinks it's quite nice. How about
you're not
that?
Skiffy. I'm Skiffy.
Well, the listeners are deciding that.
No,
as
no. When we have over 100 listeners, then we can do a vote.
Oh no, I'm doing a vote right now. If you want to do a revote, then we can do a revote. But
I'm Skiffy right now.
You cannot be Skiffy because you have no idea what we're talking about most of the time.
We're gonna argue through the whole podcast over this. You know, you could just.
We're going to argue over many podcasts about this until the rightful Skiffy takes his place.
I am the rightful Skiffy. Anyway, we're going to move on now since you're going to keep bugging me about this. We're calling this person the literary terrorist.
You're calling this person the literary terrorist.
But you seem to like that title. It's
funny, but...
Yeah, well, it is funny because she is a literary terrorist. This Florida mother... I live in Florida, so I'm particularly ashamed of the state I live in. This Florida mother refused to return 4 books to her local library for 2 years, about 2 years, because she wanted to make a statement about the book's contents. The books that she withheld from the library were 4 books from the Gossip Girls series, which, Adam, you know something about and which I know nothing about, but...
Well, I know it was a show, and it's kind of like... I think it's kind of like The Hills. I've never seen that, but it seems that way.
I guess. I mean...
MTV thing.
Some MTV thing. All
is
right.
It on MTV even? I don't think it is.
Nothing's on MTV. Never mind. It would be a reality show. So it would be on MTV if it was going to be on MTV.
I thought it was a drama.
It might be. I don't remember. The point is...
Okay, listeners, you can enlighten us.
You can enlighten us. We don't watch that stuff. Anyway, point is, she took these 4 books from the library for 2 years and only recently returned them. And... She owes $85. She was hoping they would waive the fee because she's a good citizen, you know, when she's really a literary terrorist. They're going to charge her the fees. And the one thing that she said that was by far the stupidest thing I have ever heard anybody say is, it's not like I lost the books or I didn't feel like turning them in.
That's the stupidest thing you've heard anyone ever say. You need to listen to more people.
No. Well, whatever. That's pretty much at the top of my list. So far this year, that's the dumbest thing I've heard. Because, people say a lot of dumb stuff, but they say dumb stuff either intentionally or they say dumb stuff as a joke. She's saying something dumb, but she thinks she's actually saying something that's right.
Yeah.
but it's completely illogical because it is. She did take the books and not return them because she didn't feel like turning them in. So she's officially a literary terrorist. I think she should be fined at least $10,000, if not add a couple zeros to that. Possibly even get a prison sentence for terrorism against the nation.
I think she's doing a justice to keep Gossip Girl off the streets.
You don't actually think that.
No one should be reading those books.
Nobody should be reading those books, but it is
not because of the content, just because they're Gossip Girl books.
Yeah, but nobody should be.
Hey, when I worked at the library, I worked at the public library here, and I made the Twilight books hard to find on purpose. Am I a literary terrorist? I don't think so. I think I'm a literary hero.
You didn't do that because you were offended by the content. You did that because the books were crap.
I am a hero, and this is another reason why I should be skiffy. Thank you.
No. Anyway, so the next big news, which going along with, there's a lot of stupid stuff actually going on right now.
Well, there's a lot of dumb stuff going on.
There are 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, the book by Jules Verne. Everybody knows it. It's been made into movies before. It's officially getting two movie treatments. Two. One is by Disney, and the other is by Fox.
It's also very apparent which one is going to be better, in my opinion.
In my opinion, I think so, too. We will start by saying that the Fox one will be garbage.
Yes, agreed.
Especially if the newest Robin Hood is any testament to the quality of Ridley Scott's films as of late, because I just saw Robin Hood and it wasn't that great. But Fox, the Fox one is produced by Ridley and Tony Scott. Yes, that Ridley Scott, the one who did Blade Runner. It's written by Travis Beecham, who did Clash of the Titans, which was a terrible movie that I couldn't see because it was just stupid. Although it is directed by Timur Bekmambetov, I'm saying that name wrong, who did Wanted, which is the only redeeming factor about the Fox version. The Disney version, however, is written by Scott Z. Burns, who did Bourne Ultimatum. Ultimatum. Dang it. Shut up. Anyway, Bourne Ultimatum, Contagion, and The Informant. It's directed by David Fincher, who did Fight Club, which everybody loves and I think is overrated.
Me too.
Zodiac, which I actually thought was the boringest movie in the whole world. And Curious Case of Benjamin Button, which I thought was not as good as everybody said it was, but I still thought it was a decent movie, but it was really depressing. The problem, I think, is neither of them are going to be good movies.
Well, I liked The Informant, so.
I haven't seen The Informant. Is that the one with Matt Damon?
Yes, and I don't know. A lot of people didn't like it. I just thought it was, you know, it was a fun little movie. Kind of clever, kind of not.
I'll have to see it. I mean, I do like the writer. The writer, I've liked his stuff. I don't know about the director, but I think in terms of how audiences react, I think people will react much better to Fincher than they will to Beecham. But anyway. But they did say that the Disney version is going to be, quote-unquote, a visually dazzling movie.
And undoubtedly in 3D.
Yes, it'll probably be in 3D. And it'll
The new Narnia movie is in 3D, which made me really sad when I saw that. Because I don't really care for 3D movies anymore.
I don't go to 3D movies. I went to it for How to Train Your Dragon. Wasn't worth the extra bucks. The movie's good. The movie's great. Worth the money, but not
awesome.
The 3D. The 3D is just stupid.
Avatar was worth the extra $3 because, honestly, that was the only redeeming quality of the movie, was the visuals, and they were awesome in 3D.
No, there's nothing redeeming about that movie.
It was amazingly gorgeous.
No, I don't need to see neon lights. If I want to do that, I'll get a chemistry set.
You can make neon lights with a chemistry set?
I'm sure you can.
What, are you going to burn calcium?
Yes.
I think that makes a green fire.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't remember chemistry. I hate chemistry.
I was awesome at chemistry. Still am.
Well, you can go play with your chemistry set.
Again, skiffy. Another point for me. You haven't made a single point. I'm up to like 7.
What does chemistry have to do with making you skiffy?
Science fiction.
Okay, first off, we both have to admit that science fiction, by and large, doesn't even get its science right.
No, science fiction does. Science fantasy might not. Fanty.
Shut up. I am not fanty. I hate you. You suck. You haven't even seen Battlestar Galactica, so you don't even need... Don't even start with me.
Like another one of those science fiction movies that's only superficially science fiction. Series. Sorry.
It's a science fiction television show.
Whatever.
And it is the best science fiction television show ever made. Period.
Which doesn't hold a candle to any of the best science fiction books ever written.
No, I would disagree with that.
But that's because you're too lazy to pick up a book lately.
I've been picking up books, I just haven't been reading a lot. Anyway, we're moving on now, since we were talking about television just a second ago.
Just want to move on, because I'm winning.
No, you lost totally already.
Totally winning.
You lost.
Okay, 7 stupid genre shows coming this fall.
Yes, IO9 posted this, and officially, we're looking for hell this fall.
Are we going to go through all of them, or are we just going to pick our favorite stupid show?
I don't even know which is my favorite. They're all really dumb.
I have a favorite by far, so I'm going to go first.
Okay.
The title, it's on the CW, which apparently people watch.
I know what you're talking about.
It's called Betwixt, and I'll try to get through this without laughing, but it's going to be a chore. It is about a bunch of kids who go to a rave and discover they are magical creatures known as changelings. Based on a book series.
It is so stupid. That is the dumbest plot line ever.
Yes, it is.
I love the cheese factor that they put on the IO9 is they go to a rave and discover they're magical.
They're like magical changelings.
Really cheap, even crappier version of Twilight. Like, oh.
I thought the Vampire Diaries was a crappier version of Twilight, which they already make into a show.
I don't know if they're doing that. I just thought it was really... The reality is they didn't go and find out they're magical creatures. They went to a rave and got really high and had, like, an acid trip. This is like The Hangover. That's all that it is. Like, they a hangover that they remember. So, I mean, just... It's the stupidest idea. I think we agreed we're going to read one of these books, aren't we?
A Betwixt book?
Yeah.
I'm up for it.
Let's do it. Let's try to find it for cheap, because I don't want to pay brand new prices for that garbage.
It's probably a library.
I don't go to the library. I just pay for one them and my taxes. Anyway, okay, so moving on to other stupid shows.
Should we just go... I'll just read them, and if you have something to say, say it.
Oh, I've got something to say about all of them.
Okay, so The Cape, which you put as...
Retarded
Batman.
Because that's what it is. It's the retarded Batman.
I think it's trying to play off the not success of Kick-Ass. I don't think that movie was as big as everyone thought it was going
to
be.
Oh, you mean the movie that was supposed to save Nick Cage's career?
There's nothing. I thought that was The Sorcerer's Apprentice.
That too. No, he's got like 12 movies he's using to save his career.
That's a good idea. You know, one of them just statistically has got to be average.
Yeah. I mean, The Cape is just dumb. It's about a guy who gets framed for a murder and is supposed to be dead, and then he decides he's going to play the superhero his son is into and take his law into his own hand. It's just like,
We'll move on to number 2.
Yes!
No Ordinary Family.
Which is, as I call it, the Swiss Family Robinson with mutants. Because it's about a family who crash in their plane in the Amazon jungle and then get superpowers.
It's kind of like, have you ever read The Transil Saga by Gary Paulsen? Because that's kind of what happened to the kid in that. He got transported to a jungle by a mysterious blue light and then got powers.
See, that's at least more interesting, because then you could go, well, there's something about the blue light that maybe did something to him. But no, these people just crashed in the Amazon and became super.
Yeah, that was a good book when I was a kid. Wonder if it still is.
It probably is better than this show. It's really dumb. I can't believe Michael Chiklis did this.
Michael Chiklis.
Good
lord.
Gonna
punch some cobras. Bam! Because cobras live in the rainforest now.
All right, so next.
Terra Nova,
which actually may be good. It's by Spielberg, by the way, I believe. He's producing it.
That doesn't mean anything.
It may be good. It's kind of like Sliders, but with competent people building the tech, and then stupid people directing where it goes. So it's like, what would Sliders have been like if competent people, like people who actually should be doing what that guy did, but then idiots, namely politicians, taking it and deciding we're going to point it in the wrong direction. So, because it's about people going to, the millions of years in the past or something to go to where dinosaurs live, which just to me sounds really stupid. Why would you go back to a time when there are millions of ginormagantuan monstrous things?
Yeah, especially, you know, when according to Michael Crichton, we can just create them ourselves out of frogs.
Well, I'm sure there's a good reason for it. I mean, apparently the Earth is post-apocalyptic. I don't know.
Terra Nova, honestly, what? Who cares? Earth explosion. Terra Nova, Earth explosion. Also the name of my fourth grade standardized testing.
Oh, well, that's fantastic. That brings up wonderfully painful memories, I'm sure.
No, I did great on it.
Oh, well then you had a good... If mine were called Terra Nova, I would not have been happy.
So, 98 percentile, fourth grade, what?
That's fine, I got...
Again, science fiction fan. Another skiffy point for me.
That's not a skiffy point, because those are general tests.
I know, and generally, I'm smarter than you.
Well, no, you're not. I'm a grad school pal.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything.
It means everything. I got
How many people apply to that grad school you go to, sir?
Thousands.
Thousands. Really?
Thousands. Just
thousands apply to get a degree in science fiction.
No, this isn't just a degree in science fiction. It's an English program, and thousands apply to get into this English program.
Okay.
It's competitive, and it's worldwide, so bite me.
Oh, yeah, well, 80% of the kids on my campus are Asian. What? Worldwide.
So are on mine.
So is the world, kind of. But before we get any racism slapped at us, let's go to Undercovers.
Oh, yes, which is what I call Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but they know they're spies instead. And that's it. It's just dumb.
It sounds like it's going to be a slumber party.
It just sounds dumb. It's literally, just take Mr. and Mrs. Smith, but instead of them not knowing they each are spies, they know they're spies. That's it.
Yeah. Okay, next one. The best title, I think, of the bunch. Better than The Cape. We have The Event.
The Event, which sounds really stupid. It sounds suspiciously like a movie we know from a guy named Shyamalama Ding Dong. Oh, God, what was that movie? Oh, The Happening.
Yes, The Happening.
Good Lord. Some show about secret U.S. stuff and an unrealistically named U.S. president.
What was his name?
He's played by Blair Underwood, and his name is President Martinez.
Oh,
which,
yeah.
By the way, sounds exactly like a Dave Chappelle joke that I actually have heard, in which if Dave Chappelle had been elected president, his vice president would be Mexican.
And I think this, you mentioning you know anything about Dave Chappelle, decreases your skiffy qualities.
No, not really.
How so?
Because Dave Chappelle's totally into sci-fi, fool. Have you heard Dave Chappelle do his stand-up?
I have. It's completely average.
It's not. He's awesome. Moving on, since you're going to take this...
I'm so winning.
Actually, the only other one left to do is that they're rebooting Nikita with Maggie Q, which just to me just sounds dumb because she does not seem like a sort of spy-ish kick-ass person to me. But we really should have ended with Betwixt because that's by far the dumbest one on the list. So... Yeah. Anyway,
So yeah.
Good. Yeah, that's pretty much just coming out in the fall, other than the stuff that's already coming back, it's been renewed. Good shows like V and whatnot.
They had a great opportunity with Lost and Heroes ending to take advantage of this primed genre community, and they're gonna turn everyone off of science fiction and fantasy again.
Yes, by producing some of the stupidest things to ever hit the genre. And most of these aren't even really sci-fi. That, like, half of them are quasi-sci-fi.
Science fantasy. That's the
like,
umbrella
I
term.
Wouldn't even call it science fantasy, because I think that's offensive to science fantasy, so...
Well, science fantasy is just science, you know, it's fantasy with you know, that's superficially science fiction, like Star Wars.
Well, yeah, yeah, but Star Wars is better than most of these shows.
Oh, I'm not saying science fantasy is bad. It's some of the best, you know, especially the pulpy days, that science fantasy was pretty darn fun.
Yeah, it was okay.
It was fun.
It was okay.
Fun.
Fun, I would not call fun. Have you seen 2001 Space Odyssey?
Are you talking about the Kubrick movie?
Yeah.
Are you going to criticize 2001 A Space Odyssey?
That is the most boring movie ever.
Well, you just made my argument for me, sir.
No, I like the movie, but it's boring.
It's too late. It's too late for that.
I'm sorry, but that's just the what you're just going to have to deal with. I like better movies. Blade Runner's better.
Oh, oof.
Yeah. Yeah.
I honestly don't have to say anything here. My votes are stacking up.
Not really, because Blade Runner's awesome.
You said it's better than 2001 The Space Odyssey.
Some people would agree with me.
Yeah, and those will be the votes you get, which will be 3.
No, we're not having a vote.
We are having a vote. I declared it already, and since as co-host, I have equal power.
Here's the thing. You are co-host. You're a secondary citizen on this podcast, my friend.
So what are you?
I am the host.
No, you are not.
I invented the name.
No, I wanted Subgeneric to be the name because I thought it was better. But your fans voted for Skiffy and Fanti.
Well, and they'll vote for Skiffy.
My Weirdsiders would have made, you know, the right choice.
Yours don't have that many Weirdsiders.
I have 27.
I have 26
if you don't count myself.
Why are we doing that? We're like having this ego trip where we're talking about our credentials. It's
not an
irrelevant.
Ego trip.
This
is a debate for the future of the show.
For the future of mankind, maybe.
Yes. I mean, I, as Skiffy, will help reignite the genre community for science fiction. You, sir, will just write papers about it.
So?
Thank you.
What? I write papers about sci-fi. What does that mean? Is there a problem with that? You got a problem with academics? You, sir, need to go look at the Kansas City or Kansas State University or whatever Kansas, one of those Kansas places, and their science fiction program, which, by the way, has some big names.
If I'm in Kansas City, the last thing I'm doing is going to academia. I am eating enough barbecue to make my pants explode.
And thank you. You just gave me a point.
No, because many people would agree that, criticism, you know, academic criticism of science fiction is what's helping to kill it.
Okay, well, we can have this discussion later because I wrote a blog post about this, and maybe we can save that for a different episode where we actually debate one another instead of call people out for being stupid. Anyway, so the next segment coming up is actually something we recorded for the first podcast, but then we saved it for this one. Some people complained that we had the split audio. We fixed that for this, but it's not fixed for the segment that's coming up, unfortunately, because we recorded it last week. So you're going to get the split audio for like the next 10 minutes or something. Sorry, that's just the way it is. But we should have that fixed from now on. Say what?
It's your fault for that. I mean, a true science fiction fan would know the technology behind this and would not have split the audio.
Yeah, we'll go. Yeah, sure. Anyway, moving on. So after the porn music, because that's what everybody says our music sounds like is porn. See, it doesn't even sound like that. I don't hear the porn sounds.
It's porn 2.0.
Porn 2.0. People are watching some really weird porn. Anyway, so after the porn music, you will get the next segment, and then we will come back after that with some interesting hang-ups on the nebulas. So we'll be back in just a few.
Okay, on to our final discussion segment, which is a post you found by MD Lachlan.
Yeah, I think that's how you say his name.
about his transition from a mainstream writer into a genre writer and how those communities have responded thusly.
Yeah, well, Lachlan is he's the author of Wolf's Angel, or Wolf's Angel.
Angel.
Wolf's Angel, okay, it's kind of a strange
Angel name. Has L-E.
Well, whatever, I like
that. That'd be a weird book, Wolf's Angel. Learning with Fantasy, Wolf's Angel.
There we go, yeah. Well, so he recently released this novel, and he's originally a comedy writer under a different name. It didn't say I don't think it said in the Post what his other name was.
It didn't.
Yeah. But apparently, whenever he would go to signings or try to get, like, authors to give him, like, quotes and stuff for his books, they were always just bad experiences. Either he was viewed as a rival by his fellow authors nobody ever came to the signings. Even though his books sold well enough, nobody really came to the signings. And then he transitioned to fantasy with this novel, and he had the complete opposite experience. It's a very interesting post in which he talks about that. Like, he literally went from not hanging out with these people because they didn't want to hang out with him because he's a rival, to hanging out with fantasy guys and going to the pub and then hanging out at fantasy conventions and, like, having fans, you know, like, come up and meet him and buy his books and get autographs. And it's a really interesting question. Like,
anything that, you know, rallies against the mainstream literary culture is good in my book. And you know, he makes good points. Like, the quote he has, about if, you know, Franz Kafka walked into a bookshop and saw a fan dressed up as a giant cockroach and asked him to sign his mandible, maybe he would have been less depressed. I mean, that is, literary communities don't have, the type of, communities, we do. We have so many conventions with people dressing up in every sort of costume for who knows what reason. I have no idea what possesses them to do that.
Oh, it's fun. I've done it. I've worn cat ears and a tail in an anime convention.
Oh, man, you should not mention that on a podcast.
No, it's okay. I did it with my brother, so I've got
We're going to get some really strange fan mail now.
Maybe.
I have not dressed up as... I've never actually been to a convention yet. Thinking about maybe going to WizCon next year, because that's, like, the big one in the Midwest, and it's only a couple hundred miles away, but...
You should, yeah.
Well, I didn't go this year because I should have gone, but I didn't, and I don't know why.
I've been to anime conventions twice. I've been to three anime conventions. The same one twice, and then I went to, like, a smaller sort of thing when I lived in California. Now that I'm in Florida, it's kind of a little bit different. The conventions in my immediate vicinity are actually not that great, which sucks. The closest convention that's not anime is actually Dragon Con, which is in Atlanta, so I may try to go to that one year.
That's not very far from, inland Florida. You should make that.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, it's not that far, and in fact, I could get a plane flight to Atlanta for fairly cheap, so it's a thought. I may go, I don't know. It really depends.
Yeah, but, you always hear writers mentioning other writers in the genre community. You know, it's just we're more we support each other versus, try to outsell each other like they do in the mainstream community. You hardly ever see people linking to other contemporary authors in the mainstream. You see them linking to classic authors that, that aren't going to produce another book and,
they're dead.
Because they're dead. And plus, it just sounds better if you say that you're influenced by, Harper Lee or I can't even think
like
of
James Joyce or Dickens or.
Yeah. Well, if you say James Joyce is your inspiration, you are in. You are into their wine and cheese festivals that they have.
Yes, in which nobody shows up. Or they do because they want the free wine.
In this article, Lachlan said he had a book signing with other authors who were selling fairly well, and five people showed up to it, three for free wine. That was great.
It's It does seem like that. I go to the University of Florida, and our creative writing program has very much opposed any sort of genre fiction. And in fact, one of the professors, who's not in the creative writing program, she's one of the English professors, she's actually written a science fiction novel, which is released by Tor, and I think it's called Other Nature. I think her last name's Smith. We'll put a link for that.
Guessing Smith's a good guess.
Well, I think it's actually her last name.
Smith or Anderson it's Brown.
No, it's S something, and I'm pretty sure it's Smith. S Smith something. Anyway, point is, apparently she released this novel, and it was fairly critically acclaimed. My understanding is, I haven't read it, but it's kind of like a literary SF novel. It was fairly critically acclaimed, but like, the creative writing department wanted nothing to do with her. That's my understanding, anyway.
Well, if you think they are close to genre fic, there is one creative writing teacher at the University of Wisconsin-Superior, which is where I go. And his name's Anthony Bukowski. There's another guy, I think, with that name, but he only writes realistic fiction. Like, his experimental will be like a series of newspaper headlines as a story, you know. They are really uber literary here, and which sucks because I'm a writing minor and I don't write that. So I have these teachers who look at me because I'm not a half bad writer, but I write things they don't like.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
See, I'm a grad student, so I'm not in the creative writing program, but that's because I want to not starve when I graduate. But knowing that, like, I know I wouldn't have gotten into the program here if I had tried, because all of my stuff would have been, it would have been, like, more, or my attempt at literary style SF or fantasy, but it would not have, they would have not impressed them. They would have, like, seen, oh my gosh, that guy's a robot, or that guy uses magic, or whatever, and they'd be like, this is evil genre fiction, it's created by Satan, you've been possessed by the devil, it's James Joyce's other half, and he's eating your soul from the inside. So,
well, just say you write Margaret Atwood type science fiction.
I write like Margaret Atwood. Hoity-toity.
She's Canadian. So unless you can do a bad French accent.
No. All hoity-toity authors like her talk like that.
Yeah, that, aw, when an author clearly writes genre and tries to deny it, it so bugs me. I almost gave up on Kurt Vonnegut when I saw that quote. And if, you know, Harrison Bergeron or Cat's Cradle weren't that good, I wouldn't read him anymore.
Well, Atwood's tried to retract it now. She's trying to play the whole, but genre fiction's amazing. Sci-fi's awesome.
No, she doesn't say sci-fi. She says speculative. You know, that's like the buzzword. You can say you write speculative fiction because it doesn't sound as, you know. I can't say science fiction sounds bad because it doesn't sound bad to me. It's what draws my interest.
Well, she did one of her more recent ones. I think it was last month. She did say, she did write something which is kind of like a glowing endorsement of science fiction. In which she doesn't go off and start saying the whole, I write speculative fiction. Like, she doesn't do that. It does seem like she's sort of changing her tune, and I think maybe because she has been, like, basically flipping the bird to the entire genre community, realizing that they're, like, her rabid fans. You know, these are the people that, like, really care about her work. They're not just saying, oh, it's a good novel. They're like, you know, this is an amazing book, and it's great sci-fi, and, like, this is awesome. I'm going to dress up as your characters, like the Lachlan guy was saying. And
yeah, that'd be funny to see someone dress up as a handmaid.
Ugh. It would be cool, but kind of scary.
Yeah, I can't stand her, so.
I don't.
We're making a lot of enemies during this podcast.
We are. We're
episode
making
one.
Great enemies.
You know, but I think we might have made friends with Neil Gaiman, so. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, he's okay in my book. He donated $45,000 to charity, so I'm good with that.
You know, Coraline was pretty darn awesome.
I haven't read Coraline. I did read the original short story that the Graveyard book is based off of, and it was actually kind of cool.
Yeah, you gotta rep the Midwest authors, and you gotta rep anyone with that much success in the field, so.
Yeah.
Even if like he's not my favorite writer, like American Gods has some just scenes that stick in your head for a long time, and it's great up until like about page 200, where it's the novelty wears off.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's some of the scenes in that are just phenomenal.
Well, the movies have been pretty good at the one. Oh, I've only seen Stardust, so I really can't say movies.
Never seen Coraline? That's a great movie.
I haven't seen Coraline. I kind of wanted to see it. I'll have to see it.
Yeah, it's not very long. Really good visuals.
Yeah, well, it's stop motion, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I remember. Yeah, because I've been listening to interviews with him, and he was talking. I listened to this podcast, the Space Podcast, I think it's called. It's from Canada. It's a Canadian podcast. And he's been talking a lot about that, about why he picked stop motion for that. Like, he literally went to the guy who did the Nightmare Before Christmas and, like, looked for the guy who did the stop motion, like, literally pitched it to him. So,
well, Henry Selick is the guy who got Tim Burton hooked on the Tim Burton style, which is kind of weird. Because a lot of people think, like, a ton of people think Coraline's a Tim Burton movie. It's not. It's a Henry Selick movie.
Right, right, right.
I had, I think, James Kennedy pointed that out to me.
We have a few Nebula hang-ups because I actually went and read Spar. Yeah. It's like a moment of silence for like the death of the genre right now. Because this go.
No, you go first.
All right.
It's the generosity of Skiffy doing this.
No, it's your Fanti. Shut up. I read Spar, and I have to say that while you had particularly strong opinions about Spar, I have even stronger opinions. I think it is one of the worst stories ever written and published by a major venue in science fiction in the history of the genre. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I read Spar, the first time I tried to read Spar, I couldn't do it. The language was just too much to get over.
For anybody who has not read the story, I think in the first sentence it has the F word, and in the third sentence it has the C word.
The bad C word.
The word that is derogatory towards women, and which people who have manners and respect for women don't use, because it's a disgusting, terrible term, and ugh.
I wonder how I might go through Spar and just count how many vulgar terms it uses, but I finally read it and it made me ill, nearly physically. It was that just wrong.
It's a disgusting story. It's not even disgusting for a good reason. Like with Bizarro can tend to be very disgusting, but good Bizarro stories, there's a reason for it. They're disgusting for a purpose. This isn't even disgusting for a reason. I mean, it's like a really bad Japanese hentai movie, and for anybody who's ever seen a hentai movie, it's almost always some woman being raped by some sort of alien tentacle creature. Literally. That's what, like, hentai is about. But, like, Spar is just, like, a condensed, short version of a hentai movie.
And to be fair, like, I read it once, and I read it again, and I read it again. And I've asked other bloggers and people on Twitter, what is redeeming about it? Usually, I don't get an answer. That's about the actual story or the writing. It's about it being brave for the chance it took with the language or something, which I don't agree with. But it's about the alienation, you know, with the completely alien creature who can, like, only communicate through sex or something. Or about the isolation, which I can concede because it is, like, the woman is very isolated, but honestly, if that's the reason, that is a very weak reason. Or actually, a lot of people like it because it's just gross.
Well, that's fine, but it should not be winning Nebula Awards for being gross. And quite honestly, I don't buy the other argument either. I don't see any redeeming qualities for this story.
I don't either. I'm just trying to find, you know, because it baffles me, and I actually am looking at it and more of a just, I mean, I really dislike the story, but I want to know why other people do like it, which I try to find out because it got published, and I want to know why it got published. And if, like, and I'm just out of words for to describe why I don't like it.
It's just so shocking that this story got published. I mean, like, I could understand if it was published by an erotica publisher, because it's basically what it is. It's an erotica story. It's an alien raping a woman for 2,000 words. I mean, that's basically what's going on. And then you get, like, some look inside her head while she's rationalizing what's going on. But it's just really poor, and it's just, I just don't understand the purpose of the language. I don't understand why this person, Kiz Johnson, has to use the C word. I don't get it. I don't know many women who use the C word.
Well, she ever. Can because she's a woman. You can't because you're a man.
Well, that's bullcrap. I'm sorry.
It's the classic argument for words like that.
Well, that word is just as offensive to me as the N word is offensive. I just find both words disgusting. I don't know why we need them. I feel like my grandma when she tells me she doesn't understand why I use the S word. You know, like, you know, she tells me it's vulgar and terrible. But, like, I'm sitting here thinking, well, using the C word is vulgar and terrible. But, I mean, that's not the only reason I just hate the story. I mean, the language is disgusting. The C word's in the third sentence. I literally was pulled out of the story and almost wanted to stop at that point. But, I mean, the thing that some people, I guess you say, like it for is it's disgusting, and it's like it's just filthy. It's just a disgusting, filthy story for no good reason. This is the kind of stuff I've been to anime conventions, and the anime conventions I've gone to, they've always had a movie night where you had to be 18 to get in because they would play hentai, and the whole purpose is like bring beer and snack food, and you just sit in a group full of people and you watch hentai and you laugh at how awful and disgusting it is, but you don't go and say hentai movies are now the best anime movies ever, because they're not. They're terrible. And this is the same class for me.
Well,
so.
It's just like, it is completely, you know, nothing like that has been published by, you know, a publisher like Clark's World in my memory.
Nobody would touch it before.
But that's another one of the things that came up when I was doing this poll. And then, you know, I went, if anyone's read The Weird Side, you know, the editorial this week, I did a little trend on women in the past 10 years with the Nebula Award. And one of the just ridiculously strange trends was in the past 4 years, 15 of the 25 nominated stories have had some sort of captive or trapped woman in it, including the last four winners. Like, Spar is a woman isolated in an escape pod. Trophy Wives is about, you know, women trapped in bubbles who are trophies, you know?
Yeah.
I think I can't remember the one, and then there's another one about a woman trapped on an island, but, you know, it's almost to the point where it's not a trend anymore. It's like a preference.
It's really bizarre. Yeah, you're when you were doing the reading for that, I thought that was really weird how prevalent that theme is. But
yeah, I mean, and, you know, it's just this year, I think the Nebula's for the short story had a very weak ballot. Very weak ballot.
I would have taken anything over that story.
Really?
I think Spar, I mean, personally, I dislike Spar so much that I think it may actually be damaging to the genre.
I absolutely think it is damaging to the genre.
Because I just cannot believe that is Nebula material. I just don't. I mean, maybe someone can call in and explain, because I don't get it. I don't understand what's redeeming, what's good about this story. I mean, if we're talking on the bravery front, what is brave about that story? I mean, I've seen stuff like that. This isn't new stuff. It's just new stuff within the non-erotica place. It's not, I mean, there's nothing necessarily brave about the story outside of that.
I mean, and it honestly doesn't even really fit with what Clark's World normally publishes if you read them. Their stories are usually very highfalutin literary science fiction and fantasy, and there is nothing literary about that.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, well, I think beyond that, there's really not many more Nebula hangups we have. I mean, Spar was, I think, the one contention that you had. excuse me, that you had that others seem to have some sort of a problem with, and you...
No, I still think The City and the City Show won Best Novel.
Well, that... I don't have time to read the Wind-Up Girl and The City and the City to be able to argue with you about that.
Well,
it's
just that The City and the City was the best novel, but I don't know if it was the best Nebula-winning novel. There's a difference. Because, you know,
yeah.
they are a political organization. They have to make a political statement with the things they choose.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if they have to make a political
statement.
They have to. It's an award, a judged award. It should be judging based on the merits of the work. But whatever. I guess they chose that one, and I will just have to concede that I no longer have respect for the Nebulas. Again, which is weird because they announced District 9 and got my faith back in them, because if they had given it to Star Trek or Avatar, I would have been disgusted. But they got my faith back, and now that I've read Spar, they've completely ruined it again. So.
Well, they announced Sinner Baker by U.G. Foster winning right before that, and I was just like, yes, the best story of 2009 won an award, even though it hasn't been anthologized, and it was the best story of 2009.
Yeah, I've heard it's really good. I have it on my computer. I've been meaning to read it.
It is amazing. It's amazing.
Anyway, so just to close up the show...
Maybe I should be Skiffy and Fanty, and you can just be that weird guy who talks with me.
I could just be the ampersand that's in between.
You can be... That's a great idea.
I'm the ampersand? We could make the ampersand out of my face. That'd be great.
You are the ampersand. I'm Skiffy and Fanty. I'm Skiffy Fanty. You're and.
You're weird. Anyway, to close out the show, just quickly... we're reading. I'm currently still reading Angel Dust Apocalypse by the author whose name that I can't remember, and unfortunately the book is not close to me and I got dark in the middle of recording, so I'm still reading that. I'm reading Perdido Street Station and the Left Hand of God. I haven't started anything new, although I will be starting something new this weekend because I need to plow through. What are you reading, Adam?
I'm reading a bunch of different things. I'm reading a lot of online fiction, especially Tor.com. They have really good short stories I've found so far. I'm reading a book called Genesis, which is only 140 pages, and I bought it because I am also losing... I haven't been excited by a book in a long time, and I just went to Barnes & Noble, tried to find a book I had not heard of by an author I haven't heard of, and this book honestly has like a chromed cover. You can see yourself in it. And so I'm like, I am buying this. And so far, it's not very good. It's by Bernard Beckett. I mean, it's not bad by any stretch of the word.
Is it published by?
It's published by an Australian press.
Which one?
Hold on. Mariner Books.
I want to say I've heard of them, but I can't.
It's 160 pages. It's almost entirely a conversation, and it's really expository.
Okay, all right, well.
But that's not getting me back into the genre. Still reading Gardens of the Sun by Paul McCauley, which is good, but it's not like a genre shaker. Rereading The City and the City because it's that good. Waiting for the Kraken to come in the mail. Since I am moving finally next week, because I'm getting married next week, I get to open up all the boxes of my books I haven't opened for 6 months. And so, you know, I am going to have a fun summer.
That sounds fantastic.
It is.
All right. So moving on to writing then, I am working on a whole lot of stuff that I had put on hold. Another Bizarro story that I've been writing for a while that's probably the weirdest damn thing I've ever written, about a guy who puts a woman's head on his own head to wear like a hat, and then she starts talking to him. I really don't know what I was on when I came up with this idea, but I do love the story. And then I'm writing some other stuff, but I don't really think any of that's relevant at this point. What are you writing, Adam?
I'm trying to figure out a way to... write a story about quantum Darwinism.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right.
Because it's just a really cool idea. I finished up a story this week called The Hidden Neo-Surrealism of the Early to Mid 21st Century, which was my attempt at writing neo-surrealist lit, because there's really not much. There's a lot of art, and it's really cool art. has to do with like dreamscapes and irrational spaces. And I modeled that like the Atrocity Exhibition was written.
I read that, but I own it.
Do you own the book of it or the short story? Because I'm thinking the short story.
I probably have both.
Yeah. And edited about 21,000 words today of two different stories. Got those, you know, looking a lot keener. But yeah, I'm trying to focus more on science fiction right now because I want to help, you know, be that new blood eventually, as soon as someone accepts a story.
I've written pays me quite for a lot of science fiction lately.
Huh. You have, but that doesn't matter because that's just sitting on your hard drive.
Yeah.
Just so have I. So have I.
Yeah, but I've got a lot of science fiction short stories, so.
But you're like the strange SF. I'm trying to go more classic SF with what I write.
I'm not just strange. I write some strange stuff. The stuff you've read lately has been strange. I write some non-strange stuff, so.
But my writing is really kind of split down the middle between science fiction and fantasy. So that, I guess I'm not as skiffy, but that also puts me forward, so I should get both titles, Skiffy Fanty.
No, because I write predominantly science fiction. I do. You just haven't read most of it. Most of my science fiction's out right now. But most of the stories that are on my submitted list are actually sci-fi. But anyway, we're getting back into that argument over ridiculousness that you've started in this episode. So moving on now to our question of the week, which we want to hear from anybody listening to this. And it's hinging off our first discussion at the beginning of the podcast, or the show, whichever you want to call it. And that question is, who are some of your favorite new writers of science fiction or fantasy, and why are they your favorites? And new writers are people, like we did, that have begun publishing novels in the last 10 years. So we really like to hear from you. And we have three ways you can contact us. You can email us at skiffyandfanty@gmail.com.
That's and, A-N-D, not the ampersand.
Yeah, no ampersand. Yeah, it's just skiffy and. I don't even think you put an ampersand in there. But anyway, or you can send us a voicemail at 206-337-8423. And if you send something, we might even put it on the show and talk about it. Or you can leave a comment on our threads at skiffyandfanty.wordpress.com. Again, that's no ampersand. That's with an and. And those are the three ways you can send us a contact. So hopefully we'll hear from some of you guys. And
I'm really looking forward to seeing what, you know, our loyal, awesome listeners think is the new blood in the genres. And I think we probably will do one of these podcasts when Mind Meld puts out its fantasy list that it's doing.
Yeah, that would be really interesting. See if there's any differences.
Because I haven't read much classic fantasy, so.
Yeah, well, when they do that, I'll crunch the numbers for that, too. We'll do a cross-comparison between the two lists, so.
And if I find any more Nebula trends, which I'm doing right now, it's called Animals in Nebula Award Winners, and it's just as crazy.
Well, yeah, we'll bring that up in the next podcast. So, hopefully we'll be back next week, everybody, so. Have a wonderful night, weekend, day, whatever, whenever you're reading this or listening. You listen to podcasts. You don't read podcasts. I'm an idiot. So, saying goodbye and see you guys next week.
Bye-bye.
Autobots, roll out.